And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
Hi, this is Justin Coletti of Sonic Scoop, and today I want to offer you a principle, a strategy, a framework that I think could be super powerful in your own work, whether that's mixing or any other part of audio and music production. And this idea I like to call finish your mix before you start it. And it can be super powerful. And it doesn't really apply just to mixing. It applies to pretty much anything you do in the studio or really anything to do in your entire life. I kind of stole this idea from some of those productivity kind of people, right? Who write books and give lectures on how to be more productive in whatever kind of work you do. And it's something that I noticed, I thought about more and more, that had been a common thread for pretty much all of the great producers and engineers I've been interviewing now for almost a decade. Pretty much all of the most productive, most efficient, most accomplished mixers, engineers, producers I know and have talked to do this. And even the ones who say they don't do this, when I ask them more questions, it usually turns out that they do this in one shape, form, or another. And this is the idea of finishing your mix before you start it. What exactly does this mean, finishing your mix before you start it? Well, I first encountered something like this terminology in the productivity world, and it was presented to me along the lines of finish your day before you start it. And the idea was, if you actually sit down at the beginning of the day and write down your most important tasks and then kind of prioritize them before you get to work doing the stuff you're supposed to do in the day, your productivity generally goes through the roof and you generally have a much higher rate of accomplishment and sense of accomplishment at the end of the day than you would otherwise. And this has been super powerful for me when it comes to just general productivity and getting stuff done in the studio and elsewhere in life. And you can take this further, the idea of finish your week before you start it, finish your month before you start it, and even finish your year before you start it. This idea of having kind of a plan of attack and a sense of priorities before you get started is absolutely huge. And I can give you some insights and some strategies to how you can apply this idea to your own work, not just in your own mixing, but potentially in mastering, in recording, in production in general, and whatever other tasks you have to get done in the studio and in life in general. It is big. Before we get into it, the briefest of sponsor shoutouts. Big thanks to SoundToys, sponsoring this podcast from the beginning. Try out any of the very cool mixing plugins they make for free over at soundtoys.com. Also, Eventide, check them out at EventideAudio.com, where you can try out any of the software they make for free or get a sense for some of the killer hardware effects that they make. Also sponsoring this podcast, you. How? By smashing the like button if you have not done so already. That helps the YouTube algorithm gods get this information to more people so more people can have really productive time in the studio. All right, let's get right into it. What do I mean by finishing your mix before you start it? I mean having a plan of attack set up before you get into it. And this can also be applied on the micro level. You can finish your EQ before you start fiddling with it. You can finish your compressor settings before you even start touching them. And the big thing here is just to be conscious and intentional in every setting you make, because as soon as you start fiddling with knobs, you really stop hearing things as well as you can otherwise. And you've probably experienced this by going out and doing the car check, the headphone check, the let me check my mix on my friend's stereo system. And all of a sudden, you start hearing things that you didn't hear before. And part of that is you're on a new system in a new environment. But another and very significant part of it is all of a sudden, you really are in listening mode, not fiddling mode. So it is often really important and really helpful to have decisions about where you want to take a sound before you do a ton of fiddling with it. You don't have to know exactly which frequency or how high you're going to boost it or exactly where your compressor threshold is going to end up. It's not about being that precise, but it's about having a general idea in mind. So first the big picture, and then we'll zoom into kind of the more micro applications of this. So big picture. The big thing that so many of the great producers and engineers have told me that they do in the past almost decade I've done now interviewing major producers and engineers is that they almost invariably listen to the rough mix that they're provided with before they get into mixing. If you recorded or produced a track yourself and you're about to mix it, obviously you're, you know, pretty well in tune with the rough mix, but you can still go through this same process that a specialized mixer would do, which is to listen to where things are now, take some notes, and have a general sense of what's missing, what needs to be improved before you touch a single knob, before you start setting any levels. And just that exercise of sitting there, actually doing the critical listening and actually writing things down, taking a few key notes. What is it about the vocal that needs to change? Is one of the most important things establishing a new timbre or tone for it? Should it be brighter or darker? Should it have more attitude? Does it need a additional reverb or delay effect? Does that stuff need to be reimagined, or is that stuff already great baked into the original production? Is it more about smoothing out the dynamics of it or enhancing the dynamics of it to give it even more of an arc? These are questions you should be asking yourself before you start fiddling around with a vocal or the guitar or the drums or anything else. Get a sense for where things are now and where they should end up going. The rough mix is an extremely powerful guide in allowing you to do this, because if you can make things sound better than the rough mix and make the artist and producer more thrilled with the final mix than the rough mix was making them feel originally, you've won. You're doing a pretty good job. I do this as well in mastering. And when I'm first setting up any mastering session, a big part of that is listening to first some records that the artist loves the sound of, that I can get into my ear to get in the same page with the artist to get a general sense for their tastes in loudness, brightness, how much bass is enough bass, how much bass is too much bass, that kind of thing. And then listening to their track and getting a sense for how far are we away from the sound of records that they really love? What's wrong? Is it too bright? Is it too dark? Is it just about there, but I need to just make sure that the low end from track to track is sitting right? What are the things that I need to do before I start fiddling, before I start going through my chain? With mixing, I don't recommend a ton of direct A/B to people, but often while setting up for the day, just reminding yourself what really great music in the idiom you're working in sounds like before you get into your mixing for the day can be just a useful way to get in tune with your system, in tune with the room, in tune with the client, and, you know, just get your whole body, ear, brain mechanism tuned. That is your instrument. So you got to spend a little bit of time tuning it. And you got to spend a little bit of time planning and taking notes before you dive in. All right. The next way that you can apply this principle is to get pretty much all the technical minutiae out of the way before you start making creative decisions. This one is huge. And if you've listened to enough interviews or workshops with really major producers and engineers, this almost invariably comes up again. The importance of having often a template. People who are mixing more in the box or more digitally will often refer to this as a template, but people who are working on more analog-based systems might not refer to it as a template, but they have their chain. They have their bus setups. They have their aux setups, whether that's something as complex as Michael Brauer's, you know, four different bus setup plus the mix bus and additional processing, or whether it's something as simple as just a basic mix bus chain and maybe just some effects routing. Getting this stuff out of the way before you start diving into your mix is absolutely huge for not wasting time. And if you are able to reduce the amount of switching back and forth that you do between creative mindset and technical mindset, you'll become much more productive, you'll wear yourself out a lot less, and have a much better result. In general, every time you switch back and forth between creative mindset and technical mindset, you kind of lose momentum and you kind of expend additional mental energy. So it really is best to get the technical stuff, the routing, out of the way in advance, where you're setting up as many of your effect sends and returns and all that stuff beforehand, so you're not worried about doing that while you're trying to make creative decisions. I wanted to do a quick punch in here to say that a significant proportion of great mixers even do a significant amount of their heavy lifting and processing on their buses, whether those are subgroups or a main mix bus. And they may be doing compression or even EQ there to, in a way, finish some of their mix before they get started really diving in on track-by-track processing too heavily. You could also apply this approach to, you know, recording. If you're getting guitar sound, the best place to get your guitar sound is, say, at the guitar and the guitar amp and the guitar part, not necessarily from the microphone or the EQ or the rest of the chain. So you can kind of finish your guitar tone before you start capturing it as well. This goes for synth selection and drum tuning and so many other things. So there are two big things so far. The next way you can apply this idea is kind of on a micro level. And you can make these decisions in advance about things like EQ and compression. One of the things that I often recommend to people before they ever put a compressor on anything is to have a vision in mind for what you want this compressor to do to the envelope of the sound before you even start applying it. Because no matter what, anytime you put a compressor or a limiter on anything, you're going to be changing the envelope of the sound. You might be reducing the amount of attack on that sound, or you might be bringing out more attack. You might be smoothing things out with a slower release time, or you may be bringing some more life and agitation into things with a faster release time. So it's good going in before you start setting a compressor. One, what am I doing the compression for? Is it because I want it to be transparent and have additional dynamic range control? And that's the big thing I want to do here, is control the distance between the loudest and quietest sounds. Or is it because I want to do some tonal shaping, or do I want to do a bit of both? And if it is tonal shaping, what kind of tonal shaping do I want to do? Do I want it to be grittier? Do I want it to be smoother? Do I want it to be punchier and more alive? Do I want it to be more controlled? That's a good question to ask yourself before you start fiddling around with the compressor at all, because it'll give you some guidance as to how you should be setting this thing and whether you should even be putting it on in the first place. The same idea is true with EQs. There's a lot of people who will recommend to people who are just getting into EQ for the first time to try to sweep your EQs to, you know, do a big boost and sweep it back and forth until you find something that sounds annoying and then cut it. I don't love this approach. It's a good approach for learning the overall frequency ranges in the beginning, but once you're good enough, it's not my favorite approach for things at all, because chances are if you're boosting really significantly, you're going to find a lot of different frequency ranges that sound annoying, and you can end up making a lot of fairly useless cuts that are maybe more about what's going on in your room or in your monitors than actually fixing what you want to fix or addressing what you want to address in a particular sound. So the better approach I generally recommend for setting an EQ is to think about the sound that you have and what you need to do with it first, in broad strokes, in really broad terms. Is this sound being masked by other sounds, and that's why we're going to an EQ? Does it need more brightness and energy brought out of it in the top end or the upper mid-range? Is it too muddy and thick sounding, and we're looking to control the low mids? Does it need more low end? Does it need the low end brought into more control? Those are questions to ask yourself first before you start fiddling knobs, not just, this thing doesn't sound right. Let me put an EQ on it and see if I can help. This is generally not a recipe for really good or really efficient EQing. The same kind of thing can be thought of for delays, for reverbs. Man, I could give you so many more specifics if we had all day. I mean, with setting a reverb, we want to get a sense first for, should this be a long reverb or a short reverb? Should it be a complex reverb or a really simple reverb? Is it something where we want a lot of pre-delay on it, where the reverb sound almost starts to separate from the initial impact? These are great questions to ask in advance before fiddling with things. These are things that you can, as you start to get better, answer before you touch a single knob. People who are really good at this tend to do this so quickly that they don't even realize that they're doing this. They start to go by instincts. But there are a few stages in learning mixing or recording or any of this. One stage is you absolutely don't know what you're doing. The next stage is when you're fiddling with things way too much, trying really hard to figure out what these, you know, controls are actually doing. And then there's a next stage, a stage where you start asking really good questions before you touch anything. And this is the stage where you can start to become really productive and really good. And then if you get really good at this stage, you kind of get into another stage, which is you don't even realize you're asking the question. The question pops into your head and you're answering it before you're able to go through this conscious process. But before you get there, before you're absolutely thrilled with the results that you're getting, I would recommend integrating it into your being, this idea of finish your mix before you start it. It has been so powerful for me and for so many of my students who I've taught, and it's something that comes up again and again. I'd recommend this in so many places. As I'm recording this, we're starting a new year of 2020. You might be listening to this right now. You might be listening to this ages into the future. But the idea of finishing your year before you start it, plotting things out in advance so you know what you want to accomplish this year, what are reasonable goals you can hit this year, plotting out your month before you start it, plotting out your week before you start it, plotting out your day before you start it. It's generally best to start small. So if you're just getting into making, you know, lists for yourself to really be productive for the first time, it's often best to just get into the habit of plotting out your day before you start it. But I find, at least for myself, I need to give myself bigger structure and bigger vision to keep myself motivated. I love to see, where could I be in 10 years? If I keep on doing what I'm doing right now, where will I be in 10 years? And that's a great thing to, at a certain point, plot out your decade before you start it. And then you can almost reverse engineer, what do I have to do this year and this year and this year and this year? And then you can reverse engineer to get my year to happen right. What do I have to do this month and this month and this month and this month? And to get my month happening right, why do I have to do this week and this week and this week and this week? And to get my day happening right, why do I have to do today? What are my 3, maybe maximum 7 essential tasks that I have to do? This approach is super powerful when it comes to productivity in general. And I think it's super powerful whether it is about pre-production for recording, whether it's actually doing your recording, whether it is mixing. And it's an approach I still use today in my mastering. When I forget to do this, I'm always kicking myself and saying, Justin, you know better by now. I'm always kicking myself when I forget to do this. And when I do this for prolonged periods of time, man, the results are huge. My work goes better, the results are better, and my daily life just feels better. And I have more time left at the end of the day for other things as well. And I got to tell you, you can dive right into work without doing that. And sometimes you can have productive days, but you will generally be much more on track if you write this stuff down first. And honestly, half the fun of making a list is crossing it off. And it gives you a much better sense of achievement at the end of the day. And kind of makes it much easier to keep going. Well, I hope this episode has been useful for you. Kind of a New Year's theme here. Finish your year before you start it and finish your mix before you start it. Do you do something like this in your own approach? I want to hear about it in the comments down below. Did you just get inspired to try this for the first time for yourself? If so, come back. Let us know how it went for you in the comments below. We really love to hear from you. And if you're not watching the video version, if you're on the audio podcast version of this, shoot me an email, podcast@sonicscoop.com. I love to hear from you. I read every single one. I respond when I can. And I think more and more often, I'm going to try to do some Q&A episodes coming up soon so I can answer more of these questions in depth, in great detail, in podcast form, because otherwise I'm just typing out extremely long answers all the time because I can't stop going. Once someone asks me a question, I start going. So I've got to set these aside, do more Q&As. Do you want more Q&A episodes? Would you join me for some live Q&A episodes? Let me know in the comments below. If you've gotten this far and you're interested in more of this stuff from me and you want to get some live Q&A episodes where you can ask and have questions answered in real time, I'm thinking about starting those up maybe once a week, maybe on Fridays. Could be a cool, fun thing to do. Let me know what you think about that. All right, last certainly not least, big shout out to this week's sponsors, including you for smashing that like button on YouTube if you have not done so already. Or if you're listening to the audio podcast version, consider giving this a 5-star review. Big thanks to Soundtoys. Check them out, soundtoys.com, where you can try out any of their mixing effects for free. Really great stuff. One of my favorite companies in the business. Also, Eventide, another one of my favorites. Check out any of the plugins they make for free at eventideaudio.com. They also make a bunch of killer, tremendous hardware you can check out at a dealer near you. Last but not least, if you want more from me right now, try the free workshop, The 5 Habits of Truly Great Mixers, where I talk in a little bit more detail about some of these habits, including my favorite habit, habit number one, which is about note-taking during the mixing process. If you want to go even deeper on this idea, check out that free workshop, The 5 Habits of Truly Great Mixers, at sonicscoop.com/mixhabits. That's sonicscoop.com/mixhabits. If you are ready for a framework to get some more structure into your mixing, I have one last thing I can recommend to you, and that is my full-length course on mixing called Mixing Breakthroughs. It's about giving you a roadmap to the mix, how to start, what to do in the middle, and how to finish, and how to know when you're done. I'll even give you some templates, including Pro Tools templates that you can load up right into your own DAW, and also some ideas on how to create your own templates if you want to do it for yourself from scratch. I'll give you some principles and roadmap on that as well. If you want even more ideas about how to apply this to mastering, you can check it out at masteringdemystified.com. It's my full-length course on mastering where I tell you everything I know about mastering. You can master some tracks along with me, hear these changes made in real time, and get the sense for how I apply this in my own mastering work and how I'd encourage you to do the same. Well, this has been Justin Coletti of Sonic Scoop. I hope this one has been useful for you. Thanks for hanging out with me. See you next time.